much. Very interesting to see how, with the sort of similar homework given, some very some same observations made, same things read, different applications, slightly different perspectives. I don't want to recap. You're all still here. so I'm not going to tell you what you've just heard. I want to make a couple of observations, though, and then really take advantage of the fact that we've got good amount of time for discussion. The thing that really struck me is something that, in a sense, is continuous from where we started yesterday. That there is, in a way, many of the things that you talked about now, we've have come up in some form or another already, and that's really very reassuring. And the one emphasis is on the study of process, and we've had how conversion is about process. And I think both of your analyses showed how useful that perspective could be. And Martin was just talking this morning about process rather than a spectacular moment. And Nora's example of how motives could be projected back onto the first stages on the basis of how Christianization then panned out is a very useful example of that. So that's one thing that we talked about both yesterday and this morning that comes up again, deriving from this more theoretical approach. Second thing is the distinction between the false and the sincere, which Nora raised. Well, that struck a chord, seemed to me, with very much what we talked about first thing yesterday morning, and how the sort of sudden break, personal transformation topoi are misleading, and how Barbara's paper in particular talked about conversion by increment, diversity within unity, room for compromise. And again, we had that again this morning in Ori's paper. So these are our continuing themes. The idea of the distinction between the public stage and the household also, it seemed to me, came out of this anthropological study of groups. So anthropology can bring that kind of checkered reality that we were advocating yesterday in discussion more into the foreground. But it needs to avoid what Haki was talking about, the unsubtle kind of work based too rigidly on models, not a word that I heard much mentioned, but you know, behind all of this, you talked about the creation of categories. And we all know how that can box things up and make it all very tidy in a way that doesn't really suit our current evidence and our approach. Now, also, of course, we deal in a very different world as far as the availability of sources is concerned. As Nora said, absence of sources makes comparison difficult. But of course, what that does for us is that it draws more attention. We have to pay more attention to how our sources work, and that then feeds back into how our approach works. And it could be said that maybe some sociology, some sociologists and anthropologists could learn from us in the way that we approach our sources, that is something where there could be a reciprocal relationship here. One other thing that came up yesterday that I think appeared introduced through these theoretical approaches was Thomas Clancy's bugbear, you know, the missing individual. And Nora was more pessimistic on this point, but can social sciences help us? And even the other bugbear, the role of conviction, well, again, Nora was more pessimistic at the beginning of her paper, but I'd like to throw that open to discussion, because I've certainly heard different views expressed that the studies of modern conversion groups could perhaps give us some helpful parallels. So those are really the general points that I want to make, linking what we've already been talking about today with what you've said. I want to come back to two or three questions at the end, but before I do that, I just want to make one reference to something that I read a couple of weeks ago, and I'm really just bragging because I've managed, not only has Nick Higham managed to publish his Jarrow lecture given this year in June, which seems to me to be, you know, absolutely absurd speed, I've actually read it. So I want credit for that. But the point is, it's called Bede as an Oral Historian. And, you know, when I picked it up, I thought, ha-ha, here we have someone who is doing something with theory. This might be relevant for this session. So that's why I had a look at it. And I'll just say briefly something about it. What Nick Higham does is he looks at the modern practice of oral history as a new way of exploring how Bede used his oral sources. And I won't give the whole thing away, but the most telling emphasis for me, and this might just show my terrible naivete, but he brought out, he focused on how the shaping of story occurred at the oral stage, and how the desired interpretation dominated the story. It created patterns of events, interactions, and so on to make the point at the oral stage. Now, this might be where my naivete comes in, is that I was always trained, and we are all trained as serious textual critics. And so maybe not everyone else thought this, but that made me always very conscious of the shaping of the text that I read at the writing stage. So I was always blaming the writer for the shape that the eventual text came to me. It hadn't really occurred to me to push that process of shaping back into the oral period. And do have a look at Nick's lecture and see whether you find it convincing that applying this study of the mechanics of oral history to Bede does not give a different perspective, and whether that works for you. So my three questions really that I'd like to kick off the discussion with. One is Hucky's post-colonial perspective. I beg your pardon. No, absolutely not yours. The words that had only been introduced in these 2 days by Hucky, and whether people feel that there is still purchase in those ideas in our field. And the second question that I would have is, can we think of the things that we derive from these studies without our friends from the social sciences? I mean, to some extent, it seemed to me that many of the insights that you emphasized that had been derived from social sciences, others had managed to get there just by looking at the source material itself. That's my possibly jaundiced view, but I'd like to know what other people think. Do we perhaps get a methodological rigor from those that material that we need and that we benefit from? And I guess my third question would be, is that challenge of the modern parallel. Instead of just making simple substitutions, as was criticized by, I think, both of you, I think Nora used the word translate. So is it possible to translate from modern parallels to our period? Or, does the core get lost in translation? Do we do violence by doing that? So those are the three kinds of things that I'd like to hear other people's views on. I know that there's some people here in the audience whose work has made substantial use of theory, so I'd be very interested in hearing from them if they'd like to speak. But first of all, maybe I can ask if you've got questions to ask one another.